Heat waves are sweeping across the Northern Hemisphere. With them come more severe and long-lasting wildfires. Is this all down to climate change? And is it too late to do anything about it? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Bernard Smith. Europe, North America and China are baking in record-breaking heat waves. In Delhi, in India, it's already hit 49 degrees this year, 12 above the average. The heat has brought wildfires, particularly to Western Europe, forcing thousands of people from their homes. In the UK, people are bracing for temperatures to hit 40 degrees Celsius for the first time. The nation's weather office issued its first ever red alert for extreme heat. The scorching weather is fueling more than 30 blazes in Spain and Portugal. Thousands of people have been forced from their homes and are seeking refuge in makeshift shelters. Drought conditions have made areas between the two countries susceptible to wildfires. France is on its highest state of alert for extreme temperatures. Two large fires in the south are keeping emergency services busy. Thousands have been evacuated and kilometres of land lost to the flames. Natasha Butler reports from Paris.
Well, rather unsurprisingly, not many people are braving the heat at the foot of the Eiffel Tower. Record-breaking temperatures expected in many parts of France, including in the north in Brittany, an area that is known usually for its very cool climate. Now, the French government have put several regions on red alert. They have advised people to be extremely vigilant. They've rolled out their heat wave emergency plan, advising people to stay at home, stay in the shade and keep very hydrated indeed. It's not that heat waves are uncommon in France, but usually they are several years apart. Climate change experts say that because of the changing temperatures, what we are seeing is heat waves that are more intense and more frequent. This heat wave, in fact, is the second one in just a few weeks. The dry, hot weather has certainly exacerbated the situation for firefighters that have been battling blazes in the southwest of France, the Gironde region. Thousands of people have been evacuated from campsites and homes in the area. It is part of France. It's very popular indeed with holidaymakers, particularly, of course, at this time of year in the summer break. Well, meteorologists say, though, that there is some respite on the horizon for firefighters and emergency services there, with temperatures predicted to drop by at least 10 degrees Celsius in the coming days. Natasha Butler for Inside Story.
And that heat wave punishing Europe is coming from North Africa. In Morocco, firefighters have been sent to remote mountain forests in the north. Fires there have forced more than 1,000 people to be evacuated. Almost 5,000 hectares of forest have been burnt. Abdelmanim Al-Mrami has more from near the fires in Morocco's Larache province.
This forest here is called Najarin. It is located in the province of Larache in the northwest of Morocco. It is part of a national forest that stretches from the Atlantic Ocean, which is 5 kilometers away to the west, up to the Reef Mountains, located to that direction about 100 or 150 kilometers. As you can see, the firefighters are still working in this forest in order to avoid that the fire that destroyed it be reignited again because of the windy weather, because of the hot weather. This part of Morocco have registered some heat wave temperatures as high as 40 degrees in the last days, which is not normal in this region, which has basically a Mediterranean weather, the one like in southern France or southern Spain or in Portugal. But despite of that, there is a heat wave that has destroyed up to now more than 6,000 acres of forests in northwestern Morocco. Abdelmonem Lamrani for Inside Story.
Let's bring in our guests, all in the United Kingdom today. From Woking is Stephen Cornelius, Deputy Practice Leader for Climate Change and Energy at World Wildlife Fund International. In Reading is Nigel Arnold, climate scientist and professor in the Department of Meteorology at the University of Reading. And in Swansea is Stefan Durr, Professor of Wildland Fire Science. A warm welcome to you all. Stephen, these particular heat waves we're seeing now, are they a product of global warming or freak weather events?
Thanks, Bernard. So I think, a point you've made is, these things happen naturally, but, what is happening is that climate change is making them worse. So, the science is clear from the IPCC over the last year. There's been three reports that come out, one of the new bits of science is the attribution between the sort of human fingerprint and extreme weather events such as we're seeing. So, as the temperature rises, you're more likely to see heat waves. You're more likely to see other extreme weather events and events that are associated, such as wildfires.
Nigel, do you see that these are not freak weather events? They're made worse by climate change.
Oh, they're definitely exaggerated by climate change and by human emissions of greenhouse gases. It's very clear that these emissions have increased temperatures. Just rising temperatures alone would mean we have an increased chance of heat waves. But of course, as the Earth warms up, then weather systems are disrupted and so on. So it changes the frequency of the sorts of extreme environmental conditions that we're seeing at the moment. So I think climate change is definitely behind the increased frequency of heat waves that we're seeing, particularly this year.
Stefan, your specialisation is wildfires. We're seeing them now in Europe and in North Africa particularly. How much worse are they getting? How much more severe are they than they might once have been?
Well, they're clearly more severe under those very, very dry and warm conditions, because if you have a prolonged period of dry weather like we've had, combined with a lot of heat, that will evaporate more water from the vegetation, and that makes it more flammable. So for a given fire, the fire is then likely to be more extreme and much more difficult for the fire services to deal with.
OK. And Stephen, these more bigger heat waves across Western Europe, are they then more likely down to climate change than, say, more localised ones that you sometimes get over perhaps just parts of the UK or parts of France?
Well, I think a point is that, it's not just in the north that this is happening. You've had last year huge heat waves in India and Pakistan, earlier this year in Argentina and much of Latin America. So I think it's happening over the world. And so, as I said, as temperature rises on average, you're more likely to get these extreme weather events. And it may be, such as in Canada last year, where you had that huge heat wave over Western Canada. You can have these localized or relatively localized effects.
And Nigel, I know there's a calculation used called extreme event attribution for helping to understand these extreme weather incidents. Can you help us understand what that is?
Yeah, well, in a sense, this process called extreme event attribution, it looks at the chance of experiencing the sort of event we got now under current conditions with the chance of it happening under the conditions that would have pertained if we hadn't increased greenhouse gases. It's like running a counterfactual world. And these sorts of studies have demonstrated that the heat waves that we've experienced recently in many parts of the world are they're much, much more likely now than they would have been without the increasing concentration of greenhouse gases. Some of them are sort of 10, 20 times more likely. Some of them just physically wouldn't have happened without the increasing concentrations that we've seen. So the example of the heat dome in Western US and Canada last year, there's an argument that that sort of thing just wouldn't have happened without the general increase in temperatures that we've seen because of the increasing concentration of greenhouse gases.
And the wildfires that they bring, Stefan, what is the long-term damage that they're doing?
Well, there's a range of things to consider. Of course, the human impact directly, or rather the impact on humans, direct death. But also something that's often not considered is the smoke emissions. So about 300,000 people around the world die prematurely just from wildfire smoke. So that's just the smoke generated by the fires themselves. Then we have huge biodiversity loss if the fires are especially large or especially severe, like we've seen in 2019-20 in Australia, where the fires in that year were over 10 times larger what you would usually get. So fires are common in many places, also in the Mediterranean, in Australia, in Canada, but it's the actual size of those events and it's those severity with which they burn that bring the extreme impact.
Stephen, you mentioned India just before. Delhi, they've had 25 days so far over 42 degrees this year. And India now wants help from rich countries funding to build early warning systems to prepare for extreme weather events. Is that where we're at now, the mitigation stage rather than the prevention stage?
So I think there's a couple of things. So clearly, you know, climate change is happening at the around 1.1 degrees warming that we've had so far, and more in some countries. And so there's, you know, we will see more of these events and we will see them probably worse because temperatures are going to continue to rise. And the only way that we can stop them rising is by cutting greenhouse gas emissions. So we're cutting coal, oil and gas emissions, emissions from coal, oil and gas. The second point, I think, is you know, how do we build our resilience? How do we, you use the word mitigate, but how do we make the impact of these lesser? And so we do need to do both. And developed countries have promised through the UNFCCC and the Paris Agreement and the COP in Glasgow to mobilise $100 million a year. And some of that will be for cutting emissions. Some of that needs to be for adaptation and building resilience of countries.
Nigel, March was the hottest year in India since records began 122 years ago. Is this a new normal, not just in India, but in the rest of the world?
I think, unfortunately, it is. We can expect temperatures to be continually going up until we reduce emissions, and we might want to talk about that in a moment. Yeah. But I think it's almost inevitable that we will see each year new records being broken across the globe. And one of the unsettling aspects of it is it's not just in one place, it's everywhere. Records broken everywhere, I think, is really quite saddening about the state that we're in at the moment.
And are you seeing, Stefan, in parts of the world where you wouldn't ordinarily have had major wildfires, things happening that wouldn't normally happen in outside of Western Europe, I'm thinking particularly?
Well, absolutely. And even within Western Europe, we're seeing increases in fires in some area. But just to give you some context in the range of in relation to climate change, the fire weather season, so basically the weather conditions under which relatively extreme fires can occur, which is linked to humidity, wind, lack of precipitation, as well as those high temperatures, that has basically increased by over 50% on average across the globe. If you look at North America, the North American conifer forests, we have a 50% increase in the area burned by wildfires. So we're definitely seeing a huge impact around the world. We're also seeing fires moving into areas where they, as you said earlier, shouldn't or normally wouldn't burn. So, for example, northern peatlands under permafrost, they very, very rarely burn. Greenland, for example, has seen wildfires, and this is undoubtedly going to increase in the future. There's no question about this.
Nigel, I want to just talk to you also about the jet stream, because is the way, the meander of the jet stream changing in this warming era? Is that having a particular effect on heating over where there's major industrialisation, majorly industrialised countries?
Yes, well, that's one of the reasons why actually projecting the consequences of climate change can be really quite tricky. As a first approximation, as we increase our greenhouse gases, temperature rises. That's relatively straightforward. So you'd expect on first principles that as temperature goes up, the chance of heat waves and so on goes up. But because the weather systems, such as the position of the jet stream, are also changed, it makes it a bit more challenging to work out what direction, whether we're going to see more or less storms, for example. But I think the sorts of conditions that generate heat waves, we would expect those to increase as well. The meteorological conditions would increase as well as seeing the effect of the increased temperature. But when we're looking at storms and floods and so on, it gets more complicated because the position of the jet stream then, at least in the northern hemisphere, becomes much more significant.
OK. Stephen, is it getting harder to persuade people to put climate change at the top of the agenda? I say this because now people are tired of the pandemic, people are worried about the economy. Is climate change still a priority? Are you finding that people are saying, well, it's happening, we've got to put up with it, we've got other things to worry about? Is it a challenge to still keep climate change as a major issue?
I think we need to push to keep it at the top of the agenda, and it has been in a lot of countries for a while. So environmental concerns have been high if you look at surveys. But as you say, there are other things that are on people's minds. But I think it's about demonstrating how action on climate change is an investment rather than a cost, showing that we need to do this. It has benefits. And events like we're seeing now in Europe and other places around the world, they are a wake-up call for politicians and leaders that the time to act is now.
You say they're a wake-up call, but in the US, Joe Manchin, the US Democratic senator, has effectively rejected a compromise climate bill. And one recent poll in the US said 1% of voters cited climate change as the most important issue. And for under 30s, it was just 3%, whereas 2 years ago, people were taking to the streets. Why has there been that change?
I think there's, there are other things that have come up in the last couple of years. So COVID being one, Putin's invasion of Ukraine being another, and so there are issues that people are concerned about. But I think this is a long term issue that needs short term action. It needs immediate action, and so I think it's up to leaders of countries. It's up to treasuries, ministries of economy and finance to recognize that this is a problem that they need to invest in and invest in the solutions for.
Nigel, if all the promises made at COP26 were kept, would that keep us below a global 2% temperature rise now? Is it too late?
It depends on how you interpret the promises. But at the moment, the pledges that are on the table from COP would take us to a temperature increase of about 2.5 to 3 degrees, depending on how they're implemented. An optimistic interpretation gives us a chance of getting below 2 degrees, but a pessimistic interpretation would take us up to 3 or so. So at the moment, I think it's definitely not the case that the commitments that countries have made are sufficient to keep us with an increase in temperature below 2 degrees, and whether even those commitments are followed through with changing economic circumstances and so on, it remains to be seen. But to be honest, even with an increase in temperature of just under 2 degrees, we would still continue to get the sorts of extreme events that we have now. So keeping the rise in temperature to 2 degrees is by no means safe. We're already committed to really substantial increases in risk from fires, from heat waves, from storms and so on. So we really, really need to reduce emissions so that we don't end up with catastrophic increases in heat waves, fires and so on. But we do need to adapt. We need to invest in resilience in order to cope with the inevitable changes in extremes that we're going to see.
Stefan, I see you nodding away there. What's your view on the commitment to keep us below a 2% rise in global temperatures?
Absolutely. Essentially, if we end up at 3%, we basically have a severely increased or rather unrecognizable, really, fire weather pretty much everywhere in the world. So we really must not arrive at this. But we've already seen this increase, very dramatic increase in many areas of the world. And one thing that's probably worth adding here is other than reducing greenhouse gas emissions, we also have the ability to manage our vegetation better. Because if you look at the Mediterranean area, for example, we now have many more areas forested that were traditionally much more open. These are much more flammable. We're also seeing wildfires in Argentina, in Chile, in Portugal that are fanned or fueled, rather, by eucalypt species that are alien species that are used for pulp production, great for income, but very, very flammable. So in combination, there is still quite a lot we can do and must do to reduce the risk.
And Stephen, from the World Wide Fund's point of view, in terms of the climate risk from global warming, keeping that temperature to below, keeping the rise to below under 2 degrees, how significant do you think it is that we try and keep that promise?
Well, I think the promise is even stronger than that. It's we want to see the limit at 1.5 degrees rather than 2 degrees, and the reason we say that, countries in Paris put well below 2 and pursuing efforts to 1.5 degrees. And the reason they've chosen that is partly because of science and partly because of politics. And so, we know from the IPCC that there are huge differences in risk between 1.5 and 2 degrees. So on whether this be on people, whether this be on nature. And so we need to, from a risk management point of view and an investment point of view, if nothing else, is to limit as hard as possible. And we're saying that that's 1.5 degrees, which the governments have signed up to in the Paris Agreement.
Nigel, do scientists even agree on what a heat wave is? I mean, 40 degrees in the UK is extreme, but here in Doha, unfortunately, it's a normal day. What is a heat wave?
Well, one of the things that we agree on is that heat wave is based on context. So you cannot have a consistent global definition of a heat wave because we are used in different parts of the world to different types of extremes. My students I have here on one of my master's courses, a lot of them from the global south, they spent the first term complaining how cold it was in Reading. We were perfectly fine with that. Now these same students are wondering why we're complaining about so hot it is. So there is no one definition of heat wave because it depends very much on where you are, although there are some absolute physiological limits, and 40 to 42 is probably getting towards some of those where it's just physically impossible to do work. But other than the big physiological limits, then how a heat wave is interpreted depends very much on local circumstances, how you're acclimatized, and how your infrastructure and how your buildings work, which is based on what you've expected weather to be in the past.
OK. And Stefan, I wanted to also ask you the question I posed before about trying to keep climate change on the agenda, keep it on the top of the list. Do you find that the people you're dealing with, your students, understand that climate change is one of the most important issues facing the planet at the moment?
Certainly the students we have here in Swansea, I would say that they are extremely aware of this. It is also partly, of course, the courses we give and the choice they make to come to study at Swansea University. But generally speaking, if you talk to anybody about wildfires, they very often now talk about climate change. And of course, wildfires have always been normal in many parts of the world, but they're changing very rapidly. And people are becoming more and more aware of this, even in cities where people are not exposed to them, perhaps by smoke, but not necessarily to fires themselves. Thanks to you, the media, they are acutely aware of that problem.
Stephen, weren't soaring fuel prices supposed to spark a rush towards alternative fuels? And instead, we have Joe Biden only the other day come to the Middle East trying to get them to pump more oil. Isn't that frustrating? Haven't they picked anything up from what you've been saying?
Yeah, clearly, the idea that, I'm in the UK and, we have still have a high fossil fuel energy mix. Had we invested more in renewables, had we invested more in energy efficiency, so insulating buildings and like, we wouldn't be so attuned to shifting prices of oil and gas and locked into that. So, it is about the right infrastructure and moving away from fossil infrastructure.
Nigel, global warming, as we've mentioned before, is making extreme heat more common all over the world. But are these specific events, I know we touched on it before, but a bit more explanation, are these specific weather events more likely or more intense because of the human-induced warming?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's unequivocal that they're, if not generated directly by human activity, then they're made much more likely or more intense or more frequent due to human activity. I think that the scientific community is pretty clear on that. And the report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change produced last year, a summary based on the work of hundreds of scientists reviewing very, very high credibility evidence, has concluded that human activity is creating increased conditions for these sorts of extreme events. So I think there's very little scientific doubt about what's going on.
And Stefan, you would concur with that. What was your view on that?
Oh, 100%. There's no question about this. And we have clear evidence. As I said, nearly everywhere in the world, we're seeing this strong increase in fire weather. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to burn more because you need an ignition and you need the fuel. But if you bring this together, if you combine this extreme weather with an ignition, there could be lightning, there could be arson, there could be an accident, there could be a barbecue that's left behind, and then with the fuel, the dry vegetation, you have a fire event, and they are becoming more and more difficult to tackle. So it's not just that we're seeing more area burn, because in some areas of the world we see less fire because there's nothing left to burn. We have more agricultural land. We're also very good at putting out fires early on, but once those fires grow to a certain size, they're then extremely difficult or nearly impossible to put out. This is essentially then due to the associated weather conditions.
OK. And Stephen, are we, once these heat waves have blown away, once it gets slightly back to normal across Northern Europe and North America, will we forget about this, or will we move on to worrying about more day-to-day things?
I think it's important to keep talking about these issues. It's, you know, it's these things, you know, they keep coming up and we keep hearing that they're linked to climate change and we need to do more. It's now, it's about implementation. So we know what we need to do, and it's about, you know, putting, you know, increasing our amount of renewals. It's about increasing our resilience by investing in, it might be planting trees, it might be roads that are suitable for heating, it might be insulating buildings, things like that. We need to do more.
Gentlemen, okay, thank you very much. We are unfortunately out of time, but thanks to our guests Stephen Cornelius, to Nigel Arnell and to Stefan Durr, and thank you too for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for more debate, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. We are at AJInsideStory. From me, Bernard Smith, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.